You're welcome back. You're with the news at one. Within the next hour, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is due to address the United Nations in New York. A statement issued last night appeared to pour cold water on international attempts to secure a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. In it, Mr. Netanyahu said, "We continue to hit Hezbollah with all our might. This is our policy." A White House spokesman said the Biden administration had believed that Israel was on board with the proposal for a three-week truce. In another development, Yemen's Houthis say they fired a ballistic missile towards Tel Aviv. According to the UN, Lebanon is now facing its deadliest period in a generation. Scott Lucas is Professor of US and International Politics at UCD, and he joins us now on the line. Good afternoon.
Very good afternoon to you.
What do you expect we'll hear from Benjamin Netanyahu this afternoon?
It will be a very defiant Benjamin Netanyahu, very aggressive Benjamin Netanyahu, as he usually is in these speeches. But he'll be magnifying it because he will be telling the international community that this war in Lebanon must be pursued, at least from the air, because Hezbollah is a threat to Israeli security. He will say that Hezbollah is backed by Iran, so that this is also a regional threat. He will say that if Israel did not act, then its civilians could not return to the north of Israel, about 60,000 of them. He will frame this as a defensive operation rather than being, let's be honest, what it is, a very aggressive offensive operation in which on Monday alone, the Israeli airstrikes led to the single highest daily death toll since 1982. In Lebanon. Now, amongst those folks were some senior Hezbollah commanders and fighters, but there were an awful lot of civilians as well. Those civilians probably will not be mentioned by Netanyahu because they, in effect, will be acceptable casualties for his own personal motives for attacking Lebanon, as well as the broader motives of the Israeli government.
The United States is pushing for a ceasefire, as are others. But given America's importance to Israel, are you surprised at its lack of success?
No, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that the U.S. could actually put out a statement they believed a ceasefire was on the cards, because it wasn't just Benjamin Netanyahu who said yesterday that the fight had to go on. It was the head of the Israeli Defense Forces who say that Israel may carry out a ground invasion. It was the foreign minister who said that Israel will not stop until Hezbollah is defeated. It was all of Netanyahu's political and media allies who said that this second front following the mass killings in Gaza would be indefinitely maintained. So I have no clue why the Americans thought they were moving towards a ceasefire. And the reality is that unless they threatened to cut military aid to Israel, they have no leverage. They have no leverage over Netanyahu.
They have made that threat in the past, but they didn't really follow through to any significant extent. Are there, do you think, any circumstances in which the U.S. would stop sending weapons to Israel?
They certainly won't do it before the election in November, and I suspect that was part of the Israeli calculus. That the Americans, given the race between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, weren't going to take any significant step. And at this point, unless there's a real change in the position of the Biden administration, whether it be Kamala Harris coming in or the incoherence of Donald Trump, no, I don't expect the United States to do anything to curb Netanyahu. Netanyahu will only be curbed by internal pressure within Israel. And that's the key to why he attacked Lebanon. The reason why he attacked Lebanon was in part because he was facing that pressure with hundreds of thousands of Israelis on the streets and with private dissent from his own military about the way the Gaza operation was going. So how does Netanyahu get out of that bind? It's not the U.S. that matters here. It's actually telling the Israeli public and others in his cabinet, you're going to sack me in the middle of a war with Hezbollah as well as with Hamas? Go ahead and try it.
In the dying days of his administration, how important might it be to Joe Biden that he seemed to achieve something, anything at all, in the Middle East?
I think it's important to any president to try to claim a legacy. And Biden certainly has spoken of the fact that he would like to see some type of achievement come out of all the turmoil in the Middle East. But again, I want to be very realistic here. let's compare this with a president who 25 years ago, Bill Clinton, who invested a lot of capital into the Good Friday Agreement, you know, here closer to Ireland. He persisted with that despite, you know, domestic issues. He persisted with that despite politicians in Northern Ireland, in Ireland, and in the UK who opposed him at times. The fact here is that Joe Biden has tied his hands behind his back. He has not pursued any of the options that would have put any type of pressure on the Israeli government. And if you don't put pressure on the Israeli government, you will not get an end to the open-ended war in Gaza, and you will probably not get an end to the new front of hostilities in Lebanon.
Professor Scott Lucas, thank you for talking to us this lunchtime.